Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
And it's time now for The Gathering, and I'm joined in the studio by Elaine Loughlin, Deputy Political Editor with the Irish Examiner. Christina Finn is with us, political correspondent with thejournal.ie, and Colm Brophy, who is Fine Gael TD for Dublin South West and also Minister of State at the Department of Foreign Affairs. You're all very welcome. Thank you for being here today. And if you just put on your headphones there, because Christina is joining us from another part of the building. And I want to start with the elections in Northern Ireland, because Matt Carthy, I'm sure you're watching on with great interest. What are you hearing? What do you make of it so far? Sinn Féin still on track to be the largest party, of course, in the Assembly.
Yeah, and it's amazing listening to some of the reportage this morning, as if, you know, that was a given. If that is and were to transpire, that is absolutely seismic. To consider that the Northern State could have a progressive Republican woman in line to be the First Minister, and clearly as a party that would be incredibly important. But I think for Ireland that is, under any barometer, a very historic prospect. Now,
what does it mean for the people who support you in Northern Ireland, who are watching this this moment today? And it is a historic moment.
Well, for many people, and not only, you know, traditional Sinn Féin supporters, I think for nationalists and progressives of the widest hue. I was talking to a man from Tyrone who has lived in County Monaghan since his family were effectively forced out of their home during the civil rights period. You know, and it's very emotional for him, for his family, and you know, it does signify, you know, another giant leap for the peace process, for for progress on this island, and I think lots of people will be thinking of all of those people who campaign for our party, who campaign for the vote in the north.
You must be looking at, as well, at a couple of things, right? The growth of the alliance, the growth of the middle ground, and you know, a lot of the young voters saying not interested in green and orange anymore, want to progress, want to mature beyond that. And then on the other side of it, looking at what's happening to Mike Nesbitt and the people who are supporting the TUV and Jim Allister's, you know, anti-protocol rallies, they seem to be doing very well too.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things. All of the opinion polls that I have seen among young people, and I know there's a particular narrative, but all of them show that among young people in the North, Sinn Féin is by far the most supported political party. And I think there's lots of reasons for that, the representation we provide on the ground.
So you're not worried about the Alliance Party, the growth of the Alliance Party?
If anything, I think it's welcome to see new parties develop support. I think one of the things we can say with fair enough certainty is that there will be a large majority of MLAs and votes cast in favour of the protocol protecting the All-Ireland economy, the progress that we've made in the Good Friday Agreement. So on the whole, as I say, all of this is caveated by the fact that all the counts haven't been cast
yet. We're not there at all yet.
We're only based on what I'm saying in terms of the tally information. But for me, this today and the counts over the next 24 hours could mark, you know, a real seismic historic moment in Irish history.
Colm Brophy, what do you say?
Well, I think, well, first of all, we are waiting and we're going to see. There'll be a long, I think, 24 hours of counts and thing. It is, I think, a very interesting election. It's a very historic election in terms of the things that it's throwing up. There'll be a lot of work coming out of the election. I think it's really important that we move to the restoration and the formation of an assembly and an authority government in Northern Ireland. But it's an interesting day just to see those results coming in.
Mm-hmm. What about the momentum it gives Sinn Féin here, going into the next election?
Well, I think, you know, there's two very different dynamics and politics at play in Northern Ireland and in the Republic of Ireland. I mean, Sinn Féin is a large party with a large number of TDs already here in the Republic. But we have here, I believe, I would, obviously, a very good government delivering for people across a wide range of areas. And I think we will have an election, but not for a couple of years. So I think there'll be a lot of different factors at play when the Irish election actually comes about. But it will be, I believe, an election that will be, say, 2.5 years from now. And if you actually just look at the events that have taken place in the first 2.5 years of this government's term of office, it is way too early to be talking about the impact on future Irish elections.
Okay, I want to talk about another news story now that we have been discussing at great length on this programme, Elaine, and it's the National Maternity Hospital. We are back here again, aren't we? Where does this problem go? It just seems to be completely intractable as we sit here this morning.
It does, and perhaps it was the Minister not having all his ducks in a row before that Cabinet meeting, because we do know this is an issue for many years now that has caused tensions within government and outside government. This is something that I think really concerns a lot of people, the general public.
I'm just really interested in what you said there. What does that mean, that he needed to have his ducks in a row? Like, would he not have expected that if there were people sitting at that Cabinet table who had an issue with this going through, that they would have had a discussion with them before it came out the way it did and, you know, took everybody by surprise?
Well, given the sensitivity of the issue, you would imagine that both the Taoiseach and the Health Minister would make sure that all of his all of their colleagues in government would be on the same page ahead of this. Now, this was trailed and that it was coming to Cabinet the night before. Whether that was enough time given to ministers, it clearly wasn't in relation to Fine Gael. And we know that a number of ministers had said they needed more time, they needed to look over the documents. And these are complex legal documents that are hard to navigate, hard to make sense of for certainly for the regular person who isn't maybe used to dealing with
so
such.
So Minister Donnelly should have given his Cabinet colleagues more time. Could he, though? Could he have done that?
That's a question, I suppose, for Minister Donnelly and as well the Taoiseach. But on the flip side of that, Claire, you could say that maybe it's a bit of dirty tricks from Fine Gael, because they were willing to accept the National Maternity Hospital when they were in the previous coalition. And we know at the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party meeting this week that it was raised that members of Fine Gael were willing to go ahead with assurances that were less copper-fastened than the assurances that are currently being offered.
Some in Fianna Fáil feel that Minister Donnelly was treated badly, Colin Brophy. What do you say?
No, I don't think Minister Donnelly was treated badly, and I think it's very important to recognise that what actually took place was, I don't recognise that description there at all of what took place at Cabinet. Neither of us were at Cabinet. The thing that the Cabinet decided, and I think was a really important thing and a good thing to do, and it puts us in a very positive space, was to say, right, what we're going to do is we're going to publish all the documentation around this, we're going to make it available. There will now be, as there was planned, a health committee discussion on this and the documentation, giving the members of the Oireachtas who are on the health committee an opportunity to engage fully with the health minister in all of those areas. I believe that that will answer a huge amount of questions. There will also be, the minister has agreed to, a general Dáil debate, which will allow all members of the Oireachtas who want to engage in it. So I think, for such a really important project, for such a project that's wanted by so many, clearly wanted by the clinicians in Holles Street, clearly wanted by the public, clearly wanted by the women and men of Ireland, the families of Ireland, it is really important that we get it right. And I think the process that we're now engaging in, where you can have that very frank, full and open discussion in the Oireachtas, allowing all those questions to be made.
It was desperate the way it was handled. Desperate.
It wasn't.
The expectation was that this was going to be approved at Cabinet level. That's what everybody was told. And now suddenly there was a pause for 2 weeks. And now we don't know what's going to happen, because is it 2 weeks? Is it not 2 weeks?
I'm sorry. I don't think it was desperate, Claire. And I think that if I was sitting here today and there had been a decision at Cabinet and people hadn't had an opportunity, and we were now talking in the aftermath of a decision at Cabinet of some of the questions that have been raised in good faith by so many
people, have had years to go over this decision.
By people, you would be saying, why weren't people given a chance to actually go through these and investigate?
I just want to bring in Christina Flynn on this. Christina, have you any insights for us into what happened here?
Yeah, well, the fact is we've been talking about this, as you said, for 5 years, and it's right to call it a mess in the way it's handled. It's extremely rare for things to go to Cabinet that are not yet, that don't come out agreed. It's always, you know, sort of, this is going to Cabinet and it's likely to be green stamped. Why does that happen? Because there's back channels between all the ministers. They have advisors and a lot of staff that do a lot of work in the run up to Cabinet that make sure there's no hiccups like this. What happened here seems to be, yes, there seemed to be a widespread agreement that there should be pause on this deal and what they're going to do. But that's extremely rare. So to say that this is just a normal run-of-the-mill Cabinet decision is just not the case. There's no doubt there's been some tensions between all the parties and how this is handled. And how we've got to this point is, I think, having people scratching their head, because these issues have been at play for years, and how they, you know, thought that, you know, putting down legal frameworks, which I think TD Catherine Connolly, who has a legal background, was even saying in the Dáil yesterday, she's having difficulty to get through it. So if they expected to somehow get this through, you know, on Tuesday or Wednesday, and just this was it, I'm flummoxed to see how that would
McCarthy,
be the case.
McCarthy, what's your take on it?
So it was a debacle for sure. I think, again, Minister Donnelly's authority has been undermined. The difficulty is that the government aren't bringing this to the Dáil for consideration. Both Micheál Martin and Eamon Ryan, in leaders' questions during the week, asserted that, you know, the decision has been made. We're having debates in the Dáil with effectively no purpose in terms of being able to, for TDs to be able to actually outline what their specific concerns are and have those concerns addressed. And of course, The big question that nobody understands, because the Taoiseach went to great lengths to say this is a 300-year lease at a tenner a year, so it's effectively public ownership. What the St. Vincent's, the Sisters of Charity Group or government have yet to actually explain is why they will not simply gift the land to the state, resolve all of these issues, allow us then to proceed where we all want to be, which is the delivery of a national maternity hospital at this site.
Is that enough, what you've just outlined there, to delay this for years, 5 years, 10 years?
Well, for a start, it has been delayed for a long period of time.
So that, but what I'm saying, that justifies another 5 or 10 years?
Absolutely not. No, what I'm asking is why we haven't got that clarification. Because the answer, the extent of the answer that was provided in the Dáil this week as to why that hasn't happened is because they won't.
Elaine.
But why they won't has never been clearly outlined.
I agree that there wasn't a clear outlining of an explanation given by the Taoiseach in the Dáil this week. But Matt knows that, you know, a gifting of the land to the state sounds like an easy option and sounds like the thing that should be really done here, and most people probably would agree with that. But the setup of the hospital probably won't allow for that, because the plan is that there will be not two buildings on the site. This will be co-location of the current St. Vincent's and a new maternity hospital, but there won't be two separate buildings. There'll be essentially one building, and it's been described to me that a consultant working in the main St. Vincent's hospital, if a mother comes into problems and needs urgent attention, he or she may not even have to get a lift, that simply that consultant would walk down a corridor and wouldn't even realise that they were going into a separate hospital, the maternity hospital. So in that instance, what do you do? Do you gift all of the land? Do you gift the current St. Vincent's Hospital and the new hospital? Or how do you divvy up what essentially will become one building?
But what you have, it wouldn't be unusual. Well, it wouldn't be, I suppose, a regular practice. But there are instances where different public services are operating on the same land, where land ownership is in either the ownership of one or multiple bodies.
What you're suggesting brings us back to the very start of the process again.
What we have at the moment is a very convoluted legal system of a 300-year lease for this portion of land. What I'm asking, and I think it's a legitimate question, and the answer has not been given as to why, rather than that convoluted lease scheme, the land isn't simply transferred into the ownership
even
of
if
the
we,
state.
Even if we get that answer, Matt, we're not going to get any closer.
Sorry, Christina's just speaking there. Go ahead.
If we get an answer to that question, it's not going to satisfy or bring us any closer to a hospital being built. They might just give an explanation of X, Y and Z why they're not giving it to us. And that's the end of that. And then you still have the situation that you have at hand right now. So what would you do in that case?
Well, what I'm saying is we need to actually robustly actually try and achieve that result. So, for example, Mary Lou McDonald, I think very, and we've tried to deal with this in a very proactive and collegiate way with government, because at the end of the day, we all want to see the delivery of this hospital. That's the objective here.
But we want to do so in a way that... I don't know what the objective is in reopening discussions about the ownership of the land, because we have been told that every procedure that's permissible under Irish law will be performed at this new hospital. So what is the aim of what you're saying?
So the questions that have been raised, and they've been raised by people like Catherine Connolly as well as Sinn Féin representatives, as is what the particular rationale is for maintaining the site on which huge levels of public money are going to be spent in the hands of a separate entity other than the state. The Taoiseach has said, well, actually, it's effectively in public ownership. So why not move from it being effectively in public ownership to actually be in public ownership? I genuinely think that that's
And should all hospitals in the state be in public ownership then? Do we go back to all of them?
I'm saying when we're building a new site, when we're building a new hospital in 2022, I genuinely don't think we should be having a discussion as to whether it's appropriate for an organisation that that is essentially controlled by an organ of the church to have the ownership.
So you don't believe the medics when they say every single procedure that's permissible under Irish law will be performed at this hospital?
It's not about believing. It's about asking why the land isn't in public ownership. I think it's I think it's a fair point, and I think we have to be honest. I get so frustrated
when I listen to arguments like this being advanced, because first of all, you start off by criticising the fact that the government enabled a process where through the Oireachtas Health Committee, all those questions can be put and answered. So you start off by complaining about that, and then you go on to say that, you know, there should be a right to ask questions. We're doing that. We're enabling you to ask all those questions. The second point, though, is this, and it was explained, I thought, very succinctly and better even than I nearly could have done it. The way in which the hospital will co-locate is not just that there will be one building on site A and one building on site B. The two will actually fully integrate. Corridors will integrate. Service areas will integrate. Literally lifts will integrate. So there will be one facility operating, and there will be, therefore, a solution needed to be found to do that, to do it, I believe, in a way that will work for everybody, because what we all want is the most effective working hospital as quick as possible as our new national maternity hospital.
But answer this, Colin. Therefore,
to be ideologically hung up on that one question, when the key thing I would say to you, which you ignored when Claire asked you, is this, is that if we go back to square one, we're looking at years and years and years of delay just for this one point. I think the state has negotiated a good solution that enables the co-location, that enables the integration between the two hospitals, and enables this to happen, and happen as quickly as possible.
But you have avoided and the I question that I have put, because I don't want this process to go back to the start. What I want to ask government is to explain why the Sisters of Charity simply won't transfer the land ownership into the state. They decided that they would not do that,
and this is a solution which enables everything to take place and enables the guarantee to be given that all procedures will be available, and enables a hospital to be built. And I think we'll look back on this hopefully in 10, 15, 20 years' time and realise that it was the right decision, that the hospital was needed and is needed now.
But let's think of this logically. The Sisters of Charity are, and the organ in which they are establishing, will be getting €10 a year.
Sisters of Charity are out of this completely.
They're part of the...
The Sisters of Charity are out of it. There's configuration. There's a charitable thing. So
why is it that we need that convoluted system in place rather than simply having a straightforward ownership shift?
If it was a situation, and I think everyone accepts this, if you were building from scratch in a location where you would be able to outright buy the land, buy it and have a fully state hospital, you'd do it that way. We can't do it that way. The decision was made that the land wasn't going to be put up for sale. So the solution, though, that has been arrived at is a solution that enables everything to happen and take place.
All right, we're not going to solve it here, I think. Let's move on to something else. And there's a report in the Irish Times today that explains that children, and this is coming from a woman called Emer Power, who's founder of an organisation called Play in Peace to help Ukrainians settle here. And she says that the Department of Children moved children with 15 hours notice. So these were children who had settled into school wearing the uniform, had made their friends, and they were told that they had to move. They didn't even have time to tell their friends that they were on the move. Christina, Emer Power says that the children are being treated like cattle that can be moved around without notice or consideration.
Yeah, I fear that this actually will be a lot more common in the weeks ahead. Unfortunately, the government have said obviously they're dealing with an emergency situation, and they housed people in hotels from the get-go come in March. But we've been told for the last number of weeks that they're under extreme pressure in terms of hotel accommodation when we're coming into the summer months. That's been booked up for tourist reasons and whatever else. And I fear that actually this is going to be a lot more common as we go ahead into the summer, because we've seen a lot more focus and discussion over other accommodation needs in Gormanstown, City West, the entire complex being used to house refugees, you know, arenas down in Cork. So I fear actually that you know, this hotel accommodation is going to start drying up in the weeks ahead. So I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to hear a lot more stories like this.
Do you think it's acceptable, Colin, for children, families to be moved essentially overnight?
No one wants to have a situation where families are moved overnight. I mean, but the reality, which we always have to remember, is that it is actually an emergency situation. We've had an incredible response from the people of Ireland, from civil society, from the people working on the ground in the state agencies, from the government, in terms of dealing with this situation and in terms of finding emergency accommodation. Nobody wants to see a situation in which a family is moved at short notice. But I think in the context of 20,000 people coming into the country, in the context, I think, of 18,000 and something being housed in accommodation, there will be, from time to time, I have no doubt, an incident which is unacceptable and nobody wants to see. What we need to do is make sure, just is to make sure that we're constantly improving the processes, constantly improving the way we do things, so as that you absolutely minimise and eliminate that type of situation, because you're dealing with people, remember, who are already traumatised. Exactly.
But the fact is, we have known that this is coming for a number of weeks, that a hotel accommodation is going to start drying up. So why families are being told in such short notice that they have to leave, when obviously they know when a contract or when rooms are no longer going to be available in those hotels, they should be given a lot more lead in time to even be able to discuss that with their children.
Also connected with the war in Ukraine was this extraordinary piece of television footage, which would have traumatised many people here, and I know it did, where you had this Russian television presenter speaking over a graphic of Ireland being annihilated, Elaine. It caused some upset. Billy Kelleher, the Fianna Fáil MEP, told us he thinks that the Russian ambassador should be sent home, and the very least we should be calling him in front of government and asking him to explain this, because we know that this presenter and this television station, the presenter's a friend of Vladimir Putin and the station is very much an ally of the Russian state. Do you think that that view would be supported now? I mean, we've had conversations around the ambassador before and what should happen. What did you make of the footage?
Yeah, well, it was extraordinary footage, especially considering that Ireland is viewed as a neutral country, that we would essentially be the target, albeit collateral damage in an attack on the UK. This question of expelling the Russian ambassador has been something that has been brought up time and time again since the start of this war. What the government will say, and what Simon Coveney has come out repeatedly to say, is it's better having someone in situ there so we can relay our concerns and our fears about what Russia is doing in Ukraine now.
Well, they seem to just bounce off them when we do that.
Well, and the flip of that is, you wonder, given the public utterances that the ambassador has made, even on this radio station in recent times, is that message actually being relayed? Is what members of government and officials, what they are telling the ambassador and asking him to report back to Russia, is that actually being reported accurately?
Mm-hmm. Sinn Féin didn't call for his expulsion. Did you see the footage, Matt, of Ireland being obliterated?
Absolutely. No, Sinn Féin have been calling for the expulsion of the Russian...
Not this week, though. He didn't come out this week and say, because of this footage, he needs to go.
Well, let me say this. This footage reinforces why the Russian ambassador needs to be expelled.
Mm-hmm. Even though we've been told by experts that the weaponry that they used in that graphic doesn't actually exist.
No, I think what the footage exemplified is the aggressive, absolutely malignant position that the Russian state has now been put in by Vladimir Putin and his regime, the ongoing actions of their forces in Ukraine. The fact that we are a neutral country, a member of the UN Security Council, I believe, puts us in a position to make an international stand. And I think that stand would be best made by the expulsion of the Russian ambassador.
Do you agree?
No, I don't. I think, first of all, what the footage shows, by the way, is how lucky we are to have broadcasters like RTE. The integrity, the independence, and the manner in which they broadcast news, you know, is a credit to independent public broadcasting in Ireland. I think what you see, I think... It's simplistic to say throw out the ambassador. It really is simplistic to throw out the ambassador.
Let's take it back just to what the Taoiseach said, because the Taoiseach said there should be an apology for this.
Yeah, it's simplistic to say throw out the ambassador over a piece of TV footage. Everybody knows that Russian TV is not independent.
Well, there's a bit of compound interest going on here now as well for the ambassador.
It's linked to the regime. The core point is that what I have always believed what the government have always stated is this, that if it was a EU coordinated action on ambassadors, then we would participate in it. But that we believe that for the moment, that in terms of maintaining that channel and that ability to communicate, no other EU member state has, one other member state has, the rest of them have not thrown out their ambassador. And I think for us to decide...
But Colm, do you actually believe that the ambassador is going back to Russia and telling the truth about what is being said here?
That in the context of maintaining, not just the context of an ambassador, but maintaining the relations that are needed for the fact that we have an embassy in Russia, that we have Irish citizens in Russia, and that unless it is done on a coordinated EU level, that it is still the best policy to maintain that. We can't coordinate what the ambassador feeds back. I have no doubt that as removed from reality as Putin is, that he is aware of what the coverage that is taking place right across the
but
West.
At the very minimum, should we not bring him in and say this was a despicable thing to broadcast on Russian state television? We're very unhappy with it, and we'd like you to convey that sentiment to your president.
It was a despicable thing to broadcast. It was the type of thing, unfortunately, that you expect from Russian broadcasters.
Like, what message does it send? We're not officially raising an objection.
And I think that it would be nice to see an apology coming for that type of broadcast. The Russians, though, have a way. I mean, they engaged with Israel over remarks made by their foreign minister and would not convey publicly that they had indicated the unacceptable nature of the incredibly anti-Semitic remarks that were made.
I mean, the whole thing just doesn't say much for what Russia thinks of us, because they refer to us as part of the British Isles for a start.
I think you've got to remember that we're now dealing with a regime in Russia that really doesn't think much of anybody.
All right, we'll leave it there. Colm Brophy, Matt Carthy, Elaine Lachlan and Christina Finn, thank you very much indeed. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Today's programme was produced by Niamh Lyons. The series producer is Alistair McConnell. Research by Amy Ryan. Louise Kerr-Ross is our broadcast coordinator. Aisling Grofferty was on sound. Have a lovely weekend. It's over to Ronan Collins.
Have a lovely weekend yourself.